Well, we know it's been wet and wild and crazy out there, but the sun's out today. It's going to rain again tomorrow. I don't know what's going to happen next. I do know one thing. Rain or shine, sleet, snow, hail, if they've got power, there's one place in Chico that has shelter, food, water, beer, wine, and happy hour. That's the Handlebar.
Yeah, they're located at 2070 East 20th Street on the south end of town here in Chico. They've been longtime advertisers here on our show. We stand by them. I was there within the past week.
We'll always be there within the next week.
It's a great beer selection. Yeah, like you said, they've got a beautiful indoor, beautiful outdoor situation. Regardless of what the weather's doing, you can count on great beers, especially during their happy hour. Like you said, Johnny, 7 days a week, 2 to 6 p.m., a dollar off any of those draft beers. Again, that's the Handlebar, 2070 East 20th Street. Go check them out, and here's our show.
Why don't we begin?
This is Fresh Hop Cinema.
Hey, welcome to Fresh Hop Cinema. On this week's show, we're covering Challengers. It's the newest from director Luca Guadagnino and stars Zendaya, Mike Faced, and Josh O'Connor as friends and tennis players over the course of a 13-year friendship. Guadagnino, the man responsible for having Timothée Chalamet make love to a piece of fruit,
yeah,
brings an equally and perhaps surprisingly sensual and physical angle to this story. But before we give you our thoughts on that, here's the beers we're reviewing this week.
Two beers from Blue Note Brewing out of Woodland, California. The first one is called Nine Lives. It is a West Coast double or West Coast IPA. That's 6.8%. And the second is the double IPA. It's called Blood on the Tracks, and it's 8.2%. So, you want to find us at places and things?
Where can they find us, John?
You're going to find our podcast episodes going all the way back to 2016. You're just going to go search for Fresh Hop Cinema on Spotify, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, all major platforms. If you like the show, take 5 seconds and leave us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts. Text us to let us know you did that, or with feedback about the show, anything you like. 530-433-0839. That is our number for the show. One more time, write it down. Save us on speed dial. It's 530-433-0839. To hang out with us on social media, just search Fresh Hop Cinema on all of those apps like Instagram, Facebook, Letterboxd, Untappd, or just head over to our website, freshhopcinema.com.
Or just head to our other website, patreon.com/freshhopcinema. Support this show for as little as $1 per week and keep us having things like bar hangs and bonus episodes and bangers and mash. You can also have your birthday shouted out. Johnny, whose birthdays do we have this week?
Nick motherfucking Land.
Say more.
It's his birthday, the Friday that this releases, May the 3rd. May the Nick be with you on May 3rd.
That's a very egotistical expression. I hope he didn't make that up. I do kind of like it.
Because May the 4th is the Star Wars day.
No, I get it.
So
yeah,
he's
that's good.
He's the prequel. He's our universe's episode one.
That's lovely.
The Phantom Nick Menace.
Speaking of prequels, then a few days before Nick's birthday, we got a birthday from Sebastian. His is on the 27th, so it just happened at the time of this recording.
Yeah, we shouted him out last week.
Did we?
Yep.
I don't remember that at all.
That's fine.
Maybe I was scrambling in notes or something. Double shout out for Seb. Oh, I do remember because I said that we needed to buy him extra beers if he came to the bar hang,
yep,
which he didn't. So never mind.
Because I forgot to invite him.
Take that back then. I'm so sorry that you were supporting us.
Reel it back in.
That's it for birthday stuff this week. Although I think since the party's happening this weekend, no, I think we stick to rules. His birthday's next weekend, or next week, so next week it is.
Yeah.
Okay. That's some of the perks of Patreon. If you consider anything we just said a perk, you might not. Maybe you think it's rambling.
It might be.
And maybe it is.
Who cares?
We got a bar hang this next month, in May, yeah, when this comes out.
We're being proactive. You guys spoke, we listened, we need to be better about planning events, doing fun things.
Who said that?
The get-togethers, the people that were grumpy because we didn't do them for a few months in a row.
That seems reasonable.
Yeah. All right. Like, we can't even really. Like, I know. So, yes, May 20th. If you're in Patreon, we'll send you the details. If you're not in Patreon, join so you can come party with us on May 20th.
That's terrific. Last little bit of listener mail to close out sort of Patreon stuff and housekeeping. This was a message, and this is, I think, 2 weeks in a row from our friend Lauren. And Lauren did something that made me quite happy, which is
she said I was wrong.
Sometimes, no. That doesn't make me happy. It makes me write most of the time. But I don't like that. Lauren will sometimes text me because I think she knew me before you and me before the show. Mm-hmm. So she'll text me and I'll say something like, hey, send that to the podcast so that I remember to bring that up when we do the show. Mm-hmm. So what she did this week was send it to me and the podcast in a group chat. And she's had some good feedback about the end of Civil War and also was stoked about Challengers, which nice. We'll talk about in a little bit here.
Love it.
So thanks for the text and the relevant information, mm-hmm. Lauren. Johnny, Blue Nut Brewing, what is that even?
Yeah, so they are a local, not a microbrewery. They're an artisan nano brewery.
I hate that. That's what. Where'd you get this, from their website?
From their website.
I don't like that. Just be a microbrewery.
So they're not big enough.
Oh, is that what the deal is?
Yeah, they're not big enough to be micro, baby.
Okay, well, then just say nano. What's the artisan come from?
Well, they're fancy.
Okay, I don't like that.
All right.
Just quit it.
Blue Nut Brewing Company has a 6-barrel system that ensures every beer is literally handcrafted. Every batch is tested before it is kegged to make sure you're getting the freshest and best tasting beer money can buy. One big gripe with this brewery already, they are located in kind of just off of downtown Woodland.
Okay.
On Dead Cat Alley. That's the name
of
the
street
that
they're on. That's a real thing? I didn't know Woodland had a downtown.
Yeah, it's a cute little downtown. Right. It's fantastic. Don't love the Dead Cat Alley. Felt kind of bad going there, but you know me. I'm a cat boy.
Yeah, where's your tattoo? Where's your little... Your
right there.
Yeah, there it is.
The creepy cat.
Right.
So, yeah, in case you were wondering, were you wondering how much...
I never know. Like people say things like, you know, like, we're a 40-barrel system and we're small. And I'm like, what is that? And I know you've told me before.
Yeah.
I can never remember.
That's why I put it in the notes.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Okay, great.
One barrel of beer is 31 gallons. That's why a 15.5-gallon keg is also considered a half barrel.
All right.
So a 6-barrel system makes 186 gallons per batch of beer. That's
186 gallons.
Yeah.
It's not a lot.
No.
Okay.
So nano.
Well, I hope it's very good. This is my first time with this brewery.
Me too.
So you want to point out the can by chance? You just said the name of the street and I feel like the can is relevant to that.
Yeah. I can't see. So
we'll can to see. Nine Lives, obviously a reference to Gats. And there's a little kitten. So I think that's nice. You can just leave that there if you're done pouring it. But a fun can design, I suppose.
Yeah, and there's not a whole lot more information on their website or on the can. So it's a West Coast IPA, 6.8%. Here we go.
Here we go. Cheers.
Cheers.
Shall we? By the way, if people on the video side of things, that's what it looks like. Nothing super unusual. But your face just surprised you.
Maybe? Well, you know, we've done so many small, like, local hometown breweries. I'm always skeptical because, like, is it going to be a hometown banger and be good for people that can walk there?
But just for those people?
Yeah. Or is it going to be, like, good on a industry-wide standard type scale? First impression, it smelled really good. You got a big hot presence on the nose. Took down half my little taster. It is quite pleasant.
Solid.
It's light, super punchy, got a dry, like really aggressive bitterness. Nice mouthfeel. It's not too carbonated. It's got a lot of hops. It's backed up with not being too malty. And like you can tell just by looking at it, it's not going to be too malty.
Yeah.
It doesn't have that like old school coppery IPA color.
Yes.
Like it's the appropriate shade of yellow for me to think it's going to be pretty good to maybe even decent. And first drink, honestly, pretty solid.
I mean, yeah, dude, I kind of agree. Like, I almost was going to ask you, like, if there was a mustard quality that you got off the bat.
Mustard.
And then it settled in, and I was like, I don't think it's probably mustard. Very hop forward, super bright, also super light, decently clean finish, a little bit. I mean, it's a little bitter on the back end, but I'm into that for what I'm drinking. So first impression, decent. I refilled my glass so that people could see a little bit up close what it looks like. Good so far.
Yeah.
You got anything you don't like?
Just that aggressive hoppiness on the finish. You know, it could be a little bit more balanced, but like overall, I really like that it kind of knows the style it is. It achieves that very well. And like as a first impression of a brewery and this being their flagship everyday West Coast IPA.
Is that what this is?
Yeah.
Okay.
I talked to the bartender, actually went in there, dropped a business card talking about maybe doing some work together. And
in that case, have I said that I love that they are an artisan nano brewery?
I think
that's fantastic.
If they email me back.
Oh, okay.
You know.
Sure.
It was a few weeks ago, so.
Sure.
We'll see. Sure. Jury's out. We'll judge them on their beer. I dig it. Like, I think it's, I'd be stoked if this was my neighborhood brewery. Like, this is a really good everyday local brewery IPA. And I think, honestly, it would be perfectly acceptable and above average, like, in the, you know, broader scope of West Coast IPAs. It's definitely not the best I've ever had, you know, and it's going to be hard pressed to fight against some of these more notable breweries. Ghost Town comes to mind. There's some doing great brewery, you know, great IPAs out there. It's a blossoming category that's never really gone away and is only evolving into something that is even better. Like, I think the West Coast IPA, like, its most modern iteration is like some of the best forms of that style that we've ever had. But this is in the conversation for being above average. Absolutely.
As I mentioned to you, my brain's been a little spacey today. Mm-hmm. So forgive me if you've said this. Where did we get these?
From the brewery.
You did. You got them at the brewery. I walked dropped in, off a card.
Yep. Talked to the bartender that was working. It was like 11 a.m. on a Thursday.
Okay.
So it was empty in there. Talked to him. Talked to him about what they were about. Let her know that we had a podcast. She was going to check it out. It's pretty cool. But I was like, you know what? I want your two like most popular beers. Like, if you could pick two out of this cooler of singles to say, hey, this is what we're about, this is what we do best, give me two. And these are the two that she gave me.
What's the vibe in the brewery?
Industrial.
Okay. It's like brewery.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not like, it's an open tap room. Like, the tanks are kind of over in the corner.
Yeah.
So it's decent size, but it's definitely industrial. There's a, like, I think it was a wood fire pizza or a barbecue that they were getting fired up. And industrial neighborhood brewery vibe.
But like a fun place to hang.
Yeah, like just, absolutely. It reminded me of, what's another one that has that like open?
Farmers, Knee Deep, Moonraker.
Knee Deep used to have that. Moonraker still has that.
Those are the ones that came to mind immediately.
But it's very much so like a tap room that fits into the space of their working environment, which is nice, because a lot of times you get, it's all completely separated, you know, but this is just one big room. We make the beer here. You can come and drink it. Seemed like they had some cool food options. So
are you a fan of like hibachi grills or like, what's the one, what's like the name brand one that PF Chang?
Like Benihana.
Benihana. Do you like the Benihana model where like you're there and you watch it get made in front of you?
Never been. It freaks me out.
That's kind of how I feel about the breweries.
Yeah.
I don't want to, you know, like, I don't want to see how the beer that you pair with the sausage gets made.
Right.
Like, I don't know. Like,
it bothers me way less.
I just feel like it's, I can't, I'm sure it's sanitary. I think it's fine. I just think it's weird.
That's fair.
And I also think it makes for a very loud environment.
It can. Yeah.
I want a brewery one day where I can just go and like, it's quiet. It's, I want a carpeted brewery, which is a terrible idea.
Carpeted tap room.
Yeah, where like there's reading nooks and cats.
That'd be great.
And allergy pills on hand. Like, that's what I want.
Yeah.
And just like I want a cozy brewery, not like one that sounds like if you drop your glass that a shotgun is shot.
Totally.
In the building.
Yeah, because they're often, you know, like concrete or linoleum floors.
Yes, and which is great for like manufacturing. Mm-hmm. It's easy to clean, but it's a nightmare aesthetically. And I just think it's like, it's so like, ugh, another one of these.
Well, they're all pretty much the same. Like, there's very few. I've been in a couple breweries that had couches. That's always a good vibe.
Yeah, it's a great vibe.
Just for sound dampening, but also have somewhere comfortable to sit.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. The amount of breweries that have live music that have that setup blows my mind. And I've played them. I've played a bunch of them.
Just rocking in a tin can.
And I'll do it. But yeah, I mean, it's not a super pleasant listening experience. It's like you've just cranked up the most old school spring reverb on an amp and just put everything through it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's probably fine.
Yeah. Dude, I like this beer.
I like the beer too. It's a good beer.
I'm really impressed and I'm so happy. I always have such high hopes for these like smaller, I mean, by their own admission, tiny little breweries. There's such high hopes and I'm often disappointed just because the beer is usually bad.
Yeah, it is usually bad.
I mean, it's usually bad. And I'm pleasantly surprised with Blue Note Brewing's Nine Lives. I think it's a really solid IPA. And I think I would go back and buy a 4-pack of this to have on hand and drink. Like, I like it.
Did we just grab the one?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, dude. I mean, I am too. Like, I assume it's, if not super fresh, fresh.
Yeah, she said all these were canned within like the last week, and that was maybe 3 weeks ago. So
okay,
they're probably a month old.
Why have these been sitting in your fridge for so long?
we got backed up on beers and I kept going places and like just seizing that opportunity. So it just kind of snowballed. And then we had a backlog of beer, but now we're working our way through them.
Fair enough. Would you like any more?
Do you want, there's a little bit. You go ahead. I already refilled once.
Well, I think I did too, but okay.
Okay. Deal.
Give me that.
Deal. I mean, that in itself right there, good sign.
Yeah. It's way better than bad.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, how often do we do one taster and say, okay, we're good on that?
I get it. Yeah. Yeah.
A lot. I mean, just what we're doing right here is a testament to the quality.
Yes. I don't like the expression, you know, it's not the best thing I've ever had, but it's not the worst thing I've ever had.
Yeah.
I say that sometimes. I think you do too. It doesn't say much because very little.
Yeah. We're
are those two things.
We're
like, of course it's not the best or the worst. Like
use prettier words.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, this is good. It's good. I really like it. There's the bitterness that is there is, yeah, it's leaving a little bit to be desired as I sit here and kind of let it sit in my mouth after drinking. Like it's a little.
But you're supposed to swallow it, dude.
Oh, gulp. yeah, it's. I don't know. It's a little heavy on the finish. It's a little bit slightly carbonated. I think too carbonated to back up the mouthfeel. I think it could be a little bit less carbonated, a little bit more with a little more gusto, maybe. And not that that would be. I almost want. I guess I want more balance, a little bit less hop sharpness, and not, I guess, a little more sweetness. I think I want a little bit, and I don't want to, I know that's almost a slippery thing to say. I don't want it to be sweet. I just want it to be a little bit more rounded off.
Gotcha.
For the mouthfeel experience that I'm getting.
Yeah, this, I don't think it's ever been quantified, at least to me, in terms like this, but I'm going to say it, and maybe I'll be the one to quantify it for you. This feels like kind of like a second wave West Coast IPA where we've branched out from the super malt heavy kind of chewy thinking of like the Lagunitas IPAs of the world, right?
Yeah.
Still a solid beer, still a good standby if you like that style. But they are like, this is like not the, I would say we're in like the third wave of like that super modern West Coast IPA that is like super bitter, but balanced with a little bit of juice and just, you know, has that rounded kind of more honed experience, kind of like what you're asking for.
Yeah.
This feels like it's in the second wave of that, you know, progression of that style. And I feel like they're just super hop forward, less malt, cleaner and easier drinking than those, that first wave, but they still haven't hit that third wave, which we're experiencing from some of those top tier breweries right now.
But is that to say that that it's a progression of competency in beer production, or it's a different style altogether? Because like I would say, like the Lagunitas is not going to evolve to the third. It's not like it's not like a Pokemon where it's like it's still at its Charmander. Like,
I think the style is. I think some breweries have evolved with the style, and some have not. So there's a lot of breweries still stuck in that first wave, and then there's a lot of breweries cranking out beers like this that are falling more into that second wave, just hop attack with less balance. So I think it really comes down to a brewery by brewery basis of like who's evolving with that style and pushing it further in its evolution.
That's probably true. And I also think there's, I mean, it's not like the people who have loved all of the first and second wave beers are going to all of a sudden hate those beers. So like the room for growth is proportional on both the side of the production and the consumer, which I think is great. And I wonder where it's going to go. 20 years from now, like I wonder how the general beer drinking public will, if they will have a desire still for kind of like the OG malt heavy celebrations and Lagunitas IPAs.
Yeah. I'm curious as well. It's fascinating to watch the style evolve. I mean, I think just in the history of this show, you know, we started saying words like, you know, this next gen or new generation or new school West Coast IPA. It's just, it's a thing that's happening and we're kind of translating and experiencing it and figuring out what we like. Cause there's some of those like new school, that third wave, I'm going to call it that. I like that. I think it's going to stick.
Well, that's the thing with coffee.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. So we're in that. I think it's safe to say we're in that third wave of West Coast IPAs.
If we're doing this, what is, so like we're going to, and we can do some research if we need to, but like, what is first wave to you? Like when is that?
It's that era. It's the
give me a year.
Oh,
like first wave has to be like 80s, right?
Late 80s, early 90s.
Okay, I'm going to say like 89 to, and when do you think that ends?
probably mid-2010s.
Can I have benchmark beers for what stylistically that means to you?
I think around the time Pliny came out and like Blind Pig. Blind Pig was for me like the benchmark of that second wave, but I'm going to maybe eat my words if it came out earlier.
Well, I mean, we're figuring this out together.
But that's one that if just off the top of my head, I would consider that like an icon of the second wave of West Coast IPAs because it pushed that hop forward, less malt, a little bit more refreshing, crisper, easier drinking, lighter color.
Are we also safely ruling out sort of like the original India pale ales? Like we're talking craft beer.
Yeah,
right? We're not talking about
1800s. We're saying like that the craft beer revolution of the late 80s, like with Sierra Nevada, with Lagunitas, those breweries that really came to the forefront. And that's just West Coast. But
okay, as Chico people, we should know this, but I just know it's in the 80s. When did Sierra Nevada come onto the scene?
89?
86? All right. Can you do that?
Sure.
But in the meantime, I'll tell you that Pliny the Elder, the beer, not the person, which is what will come up if you Google it the first time, obviously, was 1999. So okay. Pliny was the turn of the millennium. But if we can find out, because I think I agree with you, if
79
was Sierra Nevada. So mm-hmm. that's a huge difference. Mm-hmm. So maybe first wave is 79 to 99. That's at least very convenient to write down.
I like that. That's like a nice 20-year chunk. Because, you had Torpedo, which is like the iconic first wave chewy IPA.
Okay.
Right? For me, in my mind.
Sure, sure.
This is all opinion-based.
It's an extra
you're
IPA.
Here for my opinion, so, you know.
So then we get to 1999, and we have a second wave, which is indicated by what in a beer?
So I think there was a changing of the recipe at its core in that you had less of a malt backbone and you started branching out from the traditional hops that were used by those really first wave IPAs, right?
Okay.
You started getting into the Citras, the Mosaics,
yep.
you know, and it was a clearer, crisper, lighter yellow, way less malt,
mm-hmm.
way less sweetness on the backbone. And it was just like a more overall refreshing experience, but it was that emphasis on super aggressive hop forward beers.
Okay. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to need benchmarks for when that ended. And this is just like your.
I don't think it has ended.
Or not ended, but like when the evolution towards like the when third it started, wave began.
Yeah. I mean, I started seeing it just with this show and like experiencing different beers.
18?
Probably between 2016 and 2018. Yeah.
It's called 2016.
Okay.
That seems good to me.
Yeah, and like beers like Sticky Hands for me. Sticky Hands from Block 15
is a number.
Was one of the ones where I'm like, this is an IPA, but this feels different.
Mm.
It's a different color. It's a different experience. It's had that balance and that roundness of subtle juiciness, but the hops were still the star, and it had that balance like you were talking about that you really want out of that style.
Agreed.
And there could be more, but those are just right off the top of my head. Those feel like benchmarks in the evolution of a West Coast IPA to me.
All right. Well, we can fine tune this theory as we go. In the meantime, you got anything else on Nine Lives?
I think it's very pleasant. I am quite happy with it. Super, super surprised in the best way. Super strong first foot forward.
Okay.
Way above average. This is like a 7.2 for me.
7.2. For me, it's a 7.
Yeah, this is a fantastic, everyday local brewery, tiny little brewery, by your own words, and super, super solid. Like, I'm very happy I picked it up.
I am happy you picked it up as well. If you guys listening have tried it, give us your take. We'd like to know if you were at the brewery listening to this. I apologize. I was joking. I was playing a bit. I think it's great that you're in Anna Brewery. An artisan nano brewery. That's awesome. Whatever you are in life, you can get in touch with us. You can send us a spicy text, 530-433-0839. We do love feedback. Again, our number is 530-433-0839. And if you even a little bit enjoyed our show today, you can help us out by dropping a quick rating on whatever platform you're currently hearing our succulent voices through.
Yeah. It's as easy as tapping on the screen on that phone just a few more times. That's already in your hand. I guarantee it. But just a little effort. It doesn't take much. It's really the best and, quite frankly, one of the only ways for us to get the show in front of new listeners, unless you, the listener, are out there telling people how great I am.
That'd be better.
And he's here too.
That's
so,
good.
Yeah, do that.
Coming up next is a trailer for Challengers. If you haven't seen it yet, there are no spoilers. Don't you worry, and we will be right back after that.
You think that tennis is about expressing yourself, doing your thing. But you don't know what tennis is.
What is it?
Tashi Duncan.
She's in another league.
You were incredible today.
Come on!
To have a fashion line, a foundation. She's gonna turn a whole family into millionaires.
What are you gonna do now?
Unfortunately, my only skill in life is hitting a ball with a racket.
I want you to be my coach.
I want you to be my coach.
How often does this happen? Going after the same girl? Come here.
Which one of us?
This is a game about winning the points that matter.
I don't need to play mind games with you.
Come have a cigarette with me. I have to talk to you.
I don't smoke, and I'm not talking to you.
He's not in love with you.
What makes you think I want someone to be in love with me?
Hey, I love you.
I know. You wish you never ever met
her at all. Tennis player turned coach Tashi has taken her husband Art and transformed him into a world-famous Grand Slam champion. To jolt him out of a recent losing streak, she signs him up for a challenger event, which is close to the lowest level of a pro tournament, where he finds himself standing across the net from his former best friend and Tashi's former boyfriend. This is, again, Challengers. It was directed by Luca Guadagnino, written by Justin Kuritskis. You feel okay with that pronunciation?
Sure.
Kuritskis, perhaps? Like we said at the top, it stars Zendaya, it stars Mike Faist, and it stars Josh O'Connor. We'll get into the specifics of their names if we need to in the course of this conversation. It came to theaters on April 26th. This is like this last weekend as we're recording this. It's 2 hours and 12 minutes. And a person who I respect in the film reviewing community named David Elric said of this film, it's a transcendently sweaty tennis love triangle, so turned on by the heat of competition that its sex scenes feel like foreplay and its rallies feel like porn. Where do you stand on Luca Guadagnino, Johnny Summers? And if necessary, please feel free to remind people what else he's made.
Well, that would include me needing to remember that.
Then I will tell you.
Yeah.
Oh, really? Call me by your name?
Yes, we just talked about that.
He also redid the Dario Argento
Suspiria.
And I want to say he did Bones and All, but I didn't see Bones and All. A filmmaker that is very obsessed with people's bodies, perhaps. Flesh, perhaps. Mm-hmm. Sweat, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Either the people are doing very active things, or they're just in environments that make them sweat. And he knows how to film sweat. I feel like he just like knows how to get up in there. But where do you stand on his movies?
Luca Sweaty Guadagnino.
You've seen all the ones that I just mentioned.
Yes. I think I'm like he's hitting less than 500 for me.
What did you, I know you didn't like Bones and All.
Yeah.
Oh, you don't like this.
And Suspiria was fine.
All right.
Yeah. Call Me By Your Name. Fantastic.
I would argue that this is probably the closest to that,
yeah.
Character-wise. But
totally.
Okay, fine. Let's get into it.
Yeah.
Thoughts on Challengers?
Well, folks, I didn't love it. I'm going to start with saying that.
So unsurprised.
Yeah, right?
All right.
Well, I mean, it's kind of a drama love triangle about tennis people. So they try to make their lives and their love interests and tennis all interesting. And that's a tough sell.
Do you know much about tennis?
Yeah.
Okay, I know nothing.
Yeah.
It's worth mentioning, I think. Okay. Like, maybe it's important.
I took tennis lessons when I was younger, blah, blah, blah. But also I'm a huge fan of sports movies.
Okay.
So I was judging it through several lenses, one of which being, is it a good sports movie?
Uh-huh.
But that might not necessarily have been the point, even though it was kind of attempted to be the point
sure.
a little bit. I thought that there was some unconventional writing as far as it was a very linear story that was told in a non-linear way, which I felt to be a bit heavy-handed and not necessary. I thought that it would have played as a more engaging film if it had been told in a linear fashion. I get it. There was some suspense and some stakes and some things that were pivotal to certain moments between the characters that it would have not had the impact that it had if it were told in a linear way. But also it was a bit distracting, just the time jumping back and forth, because we're going back 13 years, 12 years, then we're going back 6 years, then we're going back 6 months, then we're going back to last night. And it felt very bouncy. Obviously a film, I mean, anything we do for this, you have to pay attention to, but that was like, if you missed the little on the screen,
I agree,
like that we're going back in time.
Yes.
I had to be like, well, okay. Okay.
Yes.
So that was mildly distracting, and I get the choices were made for impact, but didn't love that. The interpersonal stuff was where this movie really shined the best. The relational things between the three main characters and their, you know, all the conflict and tensions and relationships at different phases, going from boyfriend to marriage to friendship and everything in between. It was very complex. There was a lot of emotions. So I feel like the drama of this film was its strongest point. There was some choices made with cinematography towards the last act that I hated.
All of them? Because I didn't like so. Okay.
Absolutely hated. The first person view out of nowhere where you're like bird's eye.
Okay, wait, don't say anything. Let's say we're the danger zone.
Hated it.
But we need to talk about it, of course.
That was a choice. It was a bold one, and it did not work for me. It was just super distracting, and it felt so out of place. It was more, I was thinking more about that than the stakes currently at play. So it didn't work for me at all. So like I said, the drama worked really good. The sports stuff was there. They tried to make it engaging. Tennis isn't that engaging. I'm sorry. It's just not. And it didn't land for me. So it was a good drama. It was a well-acted movie. I loved the soundtrack. The score was fantastic. There was some crazy choices with that too.
Insane
choices.
Yes.
Just so aggressive with the score at times. But I liked that boldness in that regard. It just felt tonally, those choices coupled with some of the other ones, it was like I wanted it to commit to being more of a drama instead of like this high tension sports movie about tennis players. And I don't know. It felt a little bit out of balance for me personally.
Okay.
So
okay.
I liked it. I didn't love it.
Give me your thoughts on performances.
Zendaya was kind of an abrasive character in this movie. So she was like the gruff.
Are we able to say what happens to – because I think it's in the trailer. I don't remember. But like she has an incident early on that changes the course of her life. Can we say that now or do you want to not?
No, she blew out her knee. I think they did show it in the trailer.
Right. So like
she's not a tennis player in this movie.
No, she's doing like the – living vicariously through – in a lot of ways throughout the story, both of these guys.
Yep.
And like that's worth mentioning because the tenacity of that character makes a lot of sense for like an all-star athlete. Like you just kind of go with it. But the fact that she's having to channel it as their coach at various points does make her a little bit more like, oh, all right. Like it gives a layer to that character that I appreciated.
Absolutely. She was great. She played almost more of like a villain in this movie. That's the way kind of I interpreted her character.
How so?
In that she just wasn't like the best person. Her motivations were a bit self-serving at times. And none of the three main characters in this movie, I would say, were really just good people.
Yeah, I mean, I think her motivation gets laid out pretty clearly. I think at one point, one of the guys asks her, like, what do you want? And she says, I just want to watch some good fucking tennis.
Mm-hmm.
That is kind of it for her. Yeah. Like, and then she does what she has to do throughout the movie to make that happen.
Mm-hmm.
It's a crazy idea to write a character that's just like, is just so her thing. She is tennis. Yeah. She just wants it.
She's balls deep in tennis.
Yeah. She's rackets deep in tennis.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other initial thoughts? You want to give me a rating?
Yeah, Like I said, I love certain parts of it. I liked the drama, the interpersonal, loved the score, so aggressive with the choices. Other than that, yeah, I think score is where we're at.
Okay, out of 10.
6.6.
I thought you were going to go lower.
No, it had redeeming qualities, and it wasn't a bad movie.
Okay.
It was just, it made some choices, and also subject matter and content for me wasn't, you know, the most enjoyable.
So I don't know a thing about tennis. Okay. I don't know the point system at all, which I shouldn't have started with this, but here we're going to work my way back.
Okay.
I don't understand the final face-off. Like when there's this final thing, there's a final game. It is kind of a sports movie. Mm-hmm. I don't understand the scoring. So for me, it was like, is this the last rally? Is that the right word? Rally? Mm-hmm. Or not? And like there kept being all these needle drops, which I found a little bit weird, but the editing was great. I'm jumping back now. That was a crazy place to start this. I think Zendaya was awesome in this. I think so were the guys. Like they both play very specific characters that feel like real people, albeit not great. Like Josh O'Connor in particular is like, he's a little slimy fella. Mm-hmm. Like he's so charismatic. Like that character, like I understand that character. Like I get it. And I love that rivalry. It's such like an erotic movie in a lot of ways. Like I think there's a really interesting Venn diagram with like sexuality and athleticism that gets really mangled together in this. Great cinematography. There's a lot of editing, and sometimes a lot of editing is just that. And that gets attention because it's noticeable. And sometimes people say like, well, that's good editing should be invisible. But I think there was enough inventive editing here that even though it distracted me, I really enjoyed it. There's some stuff in the face-off that I agree with you on. And I think there might be some stuff that I enjoyed that you didn't. I didn't find the movie boring ever. It was propulsive. I liked the drama. I think it was a movie. It was a drama movie disguised as a sports movie.
As a horny sports movie. But it wasn't as horny as I thought it was going to be.
I think it was just as horny, if not more than I expected, but not as graphic. Mm. There's just a way that Luca Guadagnino captures people's eyeballs and faces when they are in these like sensual moments that really makes you feel like you're there with them, which can be uncomfortable if you're sitting next to a person who won't shut up and keeps giggling and talking about it in the theater.
Uh-oh.
But that's for a later time.
Okay.
I think it's a very, very, very specific skill that he's really dialed in. Mm-hmm. I loved it. I think it was great. I'd watch it again. I'm not like clamoring to see it again. I didn't like sink its teeth into me in the way that some things do, but I thought it was a really, really solidly made movie. I enjoyed it. It's a solid 8 for me.
Okay.
Really dug it. And that's where I'm at off the bat for Challengers.
I like it.
Anything else you want to talk about before we start getting into spoilers? What are you thinking?
No, let's do it.
Okay. Then that's your last warning. When we come back from this very fun sound that we've been playing for the past several years, we're going to spoil Challengers. So consider yourself warned. Let's play some tennis.
Danger zone.
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 Hey, welcome to the Danger Zone. We're spoiling Challengers.
Yeah, dude.
That was your last warning. Go see it if you want.
Game, set, match.
We don't care. Okay, can I just start with one point that I jotted down when you were speaking, which is that you said this was told in a nonlinear way. It would have been better if it were linear. And I want to know if you think that it's possible from your perspective, if you'd agree with this, did they just use that editing to spice up an otherwise boring story?
Quite possibly.
Okay. I think say more than that because I feel like I spent some time thinking about that while you were talking and I'd like more. And I also have an example of the opposite.
Yeah. I mean, so the only time that it really had an impact on the plot was maybe basically when they started flashing back to Atlanta and what happened there.
Uh-huh.
And then the night before and the days leading up to the final. But like all the stuff about their youth – like could have really been handled in a linear fashion and then have maybe the flashbacks only go to like Atlanta because those served the plot and the stakes. The stuff that happened in their youth did, but like, I don't know. It's a very particular way of storytelling that requires that bouncing around to just sprinkle on stakes and layers to character development, which when done right is really effective.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like it was just a little bit clunky in this movie, the way it was executed.
Oh. So not even that it was unnecessary, but it was an unnecessary thing that was done badly.
And they all looked so much the same.
That I actually said that too. Like,
come on.
I agree with you. Like, if you didn't catch the, like, 13 years ago, it's like, are they? Like my, come on, Josh O'Connor's character looked like slightly more bedraggled.
Yeah, he grew
like
a beard.
Like, kind of, yeah. But like, and like, I think he gave Zendaya a different hair.
Mm-hmm.
But no, there was some, you have to be on board mm-hmm. with the story and with the casting because they're young, and they look young the whole time.
Yeah.
Or old.
They look,
if they're old, they look good.
Essentially, they look exactly the same.
They look exactly the same.
So that's where the actual mechanics and bare bones of the making that happen mm-hmm. felt clunky.
That's probably fair. I don't know what to do differently. I think this is the right casting. I mean, these people did a good job, but shy of doing some Irishman aging stuff.
Yeah, don't do that and don't hire different actors.
Right.
That's why I think it would have served the plot and overall entertainment value of the movie for me to have some of those things from their youth be more linear.
So there's this movie Passengers that came out in 2017 or something.
Mm-hmm.
Chris Pratt, Jennifer Lawrence. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm. Stuck on a spaceship.
The premise of the movie is there's this...
I don't know why I sang that.
I liked it. Right. Is this sort of intergalactic trip that humans go on, this big ship of humans go to, because Earth is uninhabitable or whatever. One character, Chris Pratt, gets woken up out of...
Cryo sleep,
sure, because of a malfunction. Fortunately, good thing he woke up because, the ship's on a crash course for, a nebula cloud of space dust or something, so he has to save them. But he wakes up Jennifer Lawrence's character so he doesn't have to be alone, mm-hmm. which is tantamount to murder, basically. Because they're not supposed to wake up for 90 years when they get to their new planet. And the whole movie, we know that this happens. So he wakes up and then we're with him for 25 minutes while he's debating this. And it's a bad movie. It's worth noting. It's not very good. But I heard somebody do a video essay on this where if you had restructured the editing of the movie chronologically, restructured the chronology, and we found out that he woke her up at the same time that she found out, which is much later in the film, it would be a better film.
It would add stakes and add
intention. Like if we just woke up with them together, it's okay, they're in this together. They have to deal with this horrible situation.
Yeah.
And then we get the bomb dropped on us. He woke her up.
Yeah.
It would have just been so much more impactful. So that's an opposite scenario where I feel like a very boring story could have been more exciting with the editing.
Totally.
I still think the story is exciting here. The relationship dynamics are mm-hmm. interesting to watch, I think, because it's sort of non-traditional mm-hmm. for most people, I would say. But I think the editing work, I think the stuff that you get in their younger years, even in the doses that it is delivered, is informative to the relationships they have in modern day, or whatever you want to call modern day, but present day.
Yeah.
So it worked for me, but I can understand why that would be distracting.
Distracting and annoying. And they tried to get me to care about tennis, which is always a tough sell.
It's not the most exciting.
It's not the sexiest sport. And it's not the sexiest thing to see on movie.
Yeah.
On movie.
Yeah. You put that on movie. I don't know. I don't know. I kind of got into the tennis thing. I don't know the rule. There's so many rules.
There's really not that many.
It feels like there's so many rules.
It's just the scoring is stupid.
Because the names are
crazy. No, it goes from 0-0 to 15-0. The first point.
Yeah.
You go for, if you get a point.
Call it one. Just make it one.
Yeah.
Why is it 50? That'd be fun to know.
Yeah.
And they all have like love. What does love mean?
What is love? Love is you have.
I remind you train to be a professional tennis player.
You have nothing.
That's what that means?
So it's 40 love.
It's nil?
Yeah. So love is nothing in tennis.
Wow.
Whoa.
Luca, my man.
Oh, dude.
Shit. all right. The last thing I had down in my notes here when we were talking is the cinematographical choices in the third act, in the matchup, right?
Yeah.
Bro,
just give me a wide shot. What love these two men that are competing.
That's so boring.
No, if you're trying to get me engaged in a sport, don't all of a sudden out of nowhere spring
video games.
First person shooter where you just see two arms in front of you. That's fucking insane.
It's
and then they put it in the ball. Sorry. That was loud. That made me so fucking mad. Why is it in the ball?
Look, dude, I don't know, but we are the ball.
Dude.
We are the racket. Like, we are the tennis world? We are tennis. I don't know either.
Why did they put the camera in the ball for a minute? And then we're just spinning. It's spinning the whole camp. The world's spinning.
That was also a choice that didn't work for me.
Oh my God.
But I'll tell you a couple choices that did work for me. There's this when Mike Face's character gives up the serve, lets his buddy score on him to even the odds.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get this final face-off where there's like this split diopter shot where it's like Zendaya's head is facing away from camera. The camera's behind her.
Mm-hmm.
And you see the back of her head, and there's on either side on the court are the guys facing each other.
I like that.
Great shot.
That was a great shot. Maybe the best shot in the movie.
Oh, I think there's some contenders for a lot of great shots, including when they decided to use a transparent what do you call the thing they play tennis on? Court, net. I guess. A court? A tennis court. Yeah. Where they shot from up or from down looking up and you could see like underneath. I thought that was really, really subversive and effective too.
Yeah.
Kept me engaged.
Mm-hmm.
I do think some of the whip pans, some of the being the ball, there was a little nauseating.
Dude, the La La Land whip pans.
And nobody can hold a candle to that Damien Chazelle work, but it was good. But it was too much.
Yeah, and unnecessary. When they did have a couple of those whips, it was Zendaya and Mike Faced.
I've been saying faced.
Faced.
What do I know?
Faced.
Yeah.
But they're just like in a hotel room, and it was just like
I loved those whip pants.
See, I hated those because they felt so unnecessary.
No.
Like they were having a conversation just like this, and for no reason.
No, the camera, not just like this. They were arguing.
But even then, have a cut.
Dude, listen, Johnny, maybe you don't get this. Their whole life is tennis. It makes sense that we would experience their arguments.
Like a rally.
Because that's what they're doing. That's all she thinks about is tennis all the time. So it makes sense that her arguing style is just tennis.
Give them the backhand.
It's great. I love that. I thought that was fantastic.
Right. So if you just have to watch this movie and think like everything's tennis.
She says it. She says, I just want to watch some good fucking tennis.
Yeah, that should be on the poster.
It absolutely should be. There's also this great shot where the boys win their trophies in their youth.
Mm-hmm.
And they hold their trophies up to each other and they kiss the trophies. Mm-hmm. Do you recall this shot?
Yep.
And then later in the bedroom, they're kissing her. And it's like the same shot, but she is the trophy, which is a little on the nose when you say it out loud.
Yeah.
But thematically made for a nice, like, oh, like that. It's just her. She's the key to their tennis playing, their love, whatever.
She's the Mr. Miyagi.
And they are her way of doing tennis still. And
yeah. The mutual muse.
She's so manipulative. Yeah. But it's like, so what did you make of the ending?
Oh, I hated the ending.
Let me start over. What do you mean by the ending? Like, what are you talking about?
Like the very end when they like come together at the net.
Why would you hate that?
Because it's not a finite resolution. Like who wins the match?
It doesn't matter.
But it's mattered the whole movie.
It doesn't.
It's been the point of the movie. She's been manipulating both of them. It is literally the point of the sports side of this movie.
I don't think so. I think the sports side doesn't matter.
Like, you're going to try and be a sports movie and then not say who wins at the end.
It's not a sports movie.
No, but they're trying to be. They try to make us care about tennis this whole fucking time.
See, I don't
think
so.
They build up to the match. It's all, and she does all this to get him, to let him win and all, to motivate him. And it's all about the match and who wins.
If it's all about the match and who wins, can I ask you how you felt about the scene in the sauna? Because my blood was pumping in that scene.
Oh, like, yeah.
That's the drama.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter to me if they are facing off on a tennis court or in a sauna with not but a towel. It's not about the match. It's about them, and it's about her, and it's about the three of them.
Well, then they should have focused less on tennis the whole time.
It's just the conduit for telling the story of the three of them. Like, I think it still works, but
now we get no payoff.
But we are talking about the same shot where they're, you know, the in most intense tennis rally in the history of tennis, like just back and forth, mm-hmm. and then you know he's gonna spike him with it, but instead of he knows if he does it, he's gonna fall and probably hurt himself. Mm-hmm. But his homie catches him. And then Zendaya does the same yell she did earlier. She's like, come on. Like, that is tennis. Like, it's for her, it's this relationship. I didn't think she says that. Just tennis is a relationship. That's what it is to her. It's all of this wound up into one. She can never play. This is the next best thing. Mm-hmm. This is her porn.
Yep.
And she has made this happen.
And she likes to sit in the corner and watch.
She just loves to watch it. Yep. And loves to be a part of it. It's great. I think she did a great job.
There are parallels.
Yeah. I don't know. I think it worked. But fair enough.
I think I never want to talk about tennis this much again.
I could give a shit about tennis. I would have, any sport would have worked for this. Mm-hmm. I really think this movie would have worked if it was figure skating. Like, it still would have worked for me. You know what I mean? Like, it would have been fine.
Totally.
Like, same movie, more or less. I don't know. You got anything else on Challengers?
Shout out to Haley Gates.
Yeah, what was
Josh O'Connor's Tinder date?
What? Why?
She's like one of the only. There's like four people that get like credits for like being speaking actors in this movie.
There's not a lot. Yeah.
No, I figured.
What a horrible date.
I figured we'd shout her out.
Sure. Terrible situation.
Yeah.
Great comedic effect.
Yeah.
That scene. There were a couple of scenes that were really funny.
Mm-hmm.
There's a particular slapping of the genitals that got a laugh in my entire theater. Yep. That was great.
I laughed at that.
Yep. There were some a little bit more subtle than others. That would be not a subtle one, but pretty great.
Should people see this?
I think so, yeah.
Should everyone see this?
No, definitely not.
Who should see this?
If you're like me, you should see it. If you're like Johnny, maybe don't.
Okay.
But it's going to be in the conversation for movies of the year, by which I mean not like awards, but I mean like this will be a cultural touchstone, I think, for movie making when we look back on 2024.
I can see that.
I think so. Let's get another beer. We can both agree that we want that, right?
Yes.
All right.
I'll get it, and I will serve it to you.
All right, back with beer number dose. Johnny, as you have some in your glass, I was hoping perhaps you could... Are you okay? What's happening to you?
I'm good. I'm listening.
I know you are. Because we have visual people now, too, so I'm...
Oh, I have my headphones on backwards.
Just strangling you.
Yeah, I was like, why is this cord here? It's never been here.
You've poured yourself some. Would you please pour me some, and we can see what's happening here? In our camera, we've got, by the looks of it, an IPA. I'm going to say a double IPA. Would you go ahead and set that can down? And also, tell me what it is we are drinking, sir.
Yeah, we are drinking Blood on the Tracks. It is a double IPA from Blue Note Brewing that is 8.2% alcohol.
Okay. Is that all the information we have at our disposal? Maybe there's something on the can besides Bob Dylan or Kate Blanchett, depending on who you think that is. What do you see? Nothing. Well, no. What do you mean no? Give me that.
It's the same thing the other one said. It's nothing about the beer specifically.
That's a bummer. We believe
in a thing called love.
Nice. Great. Did you say 80 IBUs?
No.
80 IBUs.
Oh, shit.
Okay. Try it. What do you think, dude? You got a soapy looking head going on there. That is a lot. He's tasting it. He's tasting it a lot. Taking a big old gulp.
Okay.
That's a 64-ounce... What's the gas station?
7-Eleven.
It's a 64-ounce 7-Eleven big gulp you just took.
Yeah.
Good?
Yeah. Punchy. Again, like the first one. Really upfront with that hop presence. That bitterness is lingering a bit longer, but this one has a bit of that sweetness balancing it out.
Yes, and I'm fine with the bitterness lingering because there's a hell of a lot more mouthfeel here.
Yeah.
That's much better.
Yeah, this is more coating for sure.
I like this beer. More.
Nice.
That's all I'm going to say off the top.
That's a great start.
It is a great start. 8.2%. That's hefty. Does it feel like 8.2% to you, Johnny Summers?
Yes.
Yeah. It's very obviously a strong beer.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's good. I mean,
that's nothing good. Wrong with that. I want it to feel all 8.6.
Two. Perfect. Great. You take another drink.
Give me it. I want it all.
And then I'm going to have another drink, and then I'm going to tell you if there's anything I don't like about it.
Okay. Yeah. Dude, super solid. Like, very impressed with this brewery. One of the best tiny little local breweries that we've done in a very long time. And their brewery's cute. Downtown Woodland, actually really dope.
Okay. You have a delicious little... Right on the tip there.
You got it. Trim my mustache. It's getting
out of hand. You're tasting your mustache in every drink. All right.
What do you think?
I think it's really good, but I want to hear more about Downtown Woodland.
Oh, it's rad. There's a bunch of really cool restaurants, some great old bars ranging from a really old Irish dive bar called Father Paddy's to some really cool shopping. Like, just it's got character. I've been to so many places that are just strip mall after strip mall to come upon a downtown like that where it's just kitschy and cozy. Mm-hmm. Everyone's nice. And like, I've had some great lunches there at like some just a good spots, man. It's a good town to go explore. And also knowing that their beer is this quality, there is a really cool local brewery to go check out. It's a block off of downtown.
Well, that is nice. That's great. The beer's sweet. Mm-hmm. It's sweet. It's slightly too sweet. It is slightly too sweet. I don't know. It's good. Like, it's better. I don't know. It's skewing. It's skewing pretty sweet the more I drink it. I do like it, but I feel like you wouldn't like that.
Well, it's there to offer balance to that massive hop presence and just the amplification of everything to get to that 8.2%. I'm not distracted by this. Like, it's sweet, but it's not too sweet for me. Like, I think it's as sweet as it needs to be to balance out the incredible presence of hops and that big mouthfeel. And that if it wasn't a little bit sweet, it would be too bitter.
That might be right. Yeah, it's got a very. Do you think it's called Blood on the Tracks because it's blood orange?
No,
I don't know.
There's it would have said something.
It doesn't say anything, so I'm not inclined to think it would have said something.
You would think.
It's my logic.
You want to call the brewery?
I don't need to call the brewery. Why don't you go ahead, sir, and you can just look at the screen, because you must have said that. I'm sure you must have said that.
Holy shit.
I'm over here tasting it like there's like some like citrusy, like I want to say it's blood orange. Why do I keep thinking the word blood in my head?
Wow, we're dorm.
We are so dorm. We are a couple of college kids in our dorm.
Oh my God.
So let's
start over.
Yeah.
Can we just edit this out?
No, we can't.
We're so dumb. Jesus.
This is, by the way, one of, in like a really fun way for us, but in quality control, this is like one of our worst episodes, I think, ever.
It's fine.
We're just off the rails. So again, as a reminder to everybody, like Johnny said from the beginning.
I love that everyone seeing the episode probably saw it.
They're just like, "Way!"
They're like, "Guys, you idiots, it says on the can."
So looking at it with a fresh lens, this is a can design.
He's even got blood oranges in his sunglasses.
With a blood orange in the background, Bob Dylan's got some blood orange goggles, and it says Blood on the Tracks, Blood Orange Double IPA. And we have potentially lost credibility with this brewery, but I don't care because we're not trying to impress the brewery. We're not even trying to impress you. Who are we trying to impress? Each other, I guess?
Nobody. I'm not here to impress anyone.
I'm trying to impress you, but okay.
Well, I'm in here to impress you.
Great. That makes more sense. Everything makes more sense to me now.
Yep.
That is better.
Yep.
I understand what they are going for,
yep.
And I will give them bonus points because I tasted it before I knew they were going for it.
You found that note.
I'm like, there's just so, like, what is that sweet kind of citrusy thing? What's going on here?
It's kind of orangey, but redder.
And it's like, it's like masking the hop bite, and that's exactly what it should be doing. So I guess I give credit to myself and my mouth, and I'd like to thank my mouth. I'd like to thank the Academy. I'd like to thank this brewery.
My producers, my mouth.
Yeah. It's good. There are, in my opinion, not enough of the Blood Orange IPA going around the market these days.
Well, that's fucking crazy because just on their website, it just says Blood on the Tracks, Double IPA, gluten reduced, 8.2 ABV.
I think if you're going to go to the trouble of saying gluten reduced, you might as well say the idiosyncrasies that make up your beer.
Yeah, like if there's fruit in it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Very odd. Can you pull it up on Untappd? Because I'd like to know what Untappd says, because that is sometimes where I will get sort of a secondary confirmation of a beer when I'm making notes. Because a lot of the time, it seems like Untappd does a better job than the brewery itself.
Yep.
Says it right there, huh?
No, let me see. I'm clicking Untappd.
Okay, great. Excuse me.
Blood Orange Double IPA.
Great. 8.2?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, I feel stupid.
I don't know if I'd go so far as to say you're stupid.
I feel stupid.
Well, your feelings are valid.
Yeah, because it says it.
It says it on the can, but
the hints were all there.
This is the one thing that I will say in your defense here is that we have that fun camera today. And we haven't really been looking at the can.
No.
Like, the most we've looked at the can is to set it up where it's supposed to go.
Get it so pretty.
Like, but I've been so focused doing that that I haven't even really looked at the can. So I will say that I thought that before we started, I said, hey, when you have the can set up, will you tell me that we can talk about the can, mm-hmm. that you would have thoroughly examined the can? And after I said, hey, does the can say anything else? And you were like, nope, nothing. I was like, you must have given it a full read over, and you didn't.
Oof, too much faith.
That's okay. We're still here.
Yeah, man.
The beer's good.
Hey, mistakes happen.
They do.
We're humans. We're people just like you, believe it or not.
No, but just like everybody else.
True.
Let's go ahead and give this a rating out of 10.
Now that we know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Fully informed, as we were the whole time.
As we were the whole time. Really good beer. I will still say it's a little still on the sweet side for me. Even knowing those citrus notes are meant to be there, they're still a little bit overbearing in the same way that, like, you know, any sort of adjunct beer can go over the top with its flavor. Mm-hmm. I think it's a little bit much.
I think it's just enough. I really do. I think it is a really good blend. I think the recipe is very harmonious, and the blood orange and the hops have a nice synchronicity going. I really like it. These are two beers that I've been quite impressed with, and I'm kind of stoked to get back down there.
All right. Then I think we're there. I've given you one more pour. Gave myself the same. Let's do out of 10. Do you want that drink before you make your rating, or do you want to give me a rating first?
Well, it's back and forth. It's going to be one or two scores, and there's a world of difference between them.
Then you better take another drink.
Yeah.
For me, I'm not so on the fence here. For me, it's a it's a good beer. It's not amazing. It's a good 7 for me. That's where I'm at, and I know that's lower than yours.
Yeah.
So what have you come up with?
Well, you know, I'm going back and forth, right? 7, 9, 8, 1. It's right there. But if it gets into the 8s, that's crazy.
Isn't that crazy?
I mean, it is. That's a great score.
You owe it to them to give them a better score.
It's a 7.9.
Oh, you son of a bitch.
Yeah, it's a 7.9. It's fantastic. It's a great score. For this size of a brewery,
it's a good score.
To come out and surprise me twice, that's a great score.
It's a good score.
It's a great score.
All right.
They should be super stoked on that.
They
score.
Should be so lucky.
They should be so
receive a 7.9 from me.
I have ripped apart bigger and more well-known breweries than them. And that's a great score.
I just want to let you know that I'm gonna take the phrase "I have ripped apart bigger" out of context and use that whenever
obviously.
I want.
I have.
On Patreon.
Ripped apart bigger.
Okay. Well, still, yeah, you're joking aside, great ratings. 7's awesome. 7.9's even better.
I think safe to say this is a brewery that's on both of our radars.
For sure.
Like passing through. Great.
What's their distribution net like? Nothing?
Nothing.
You got to get it from the brewery?
I think it's pretty local, yeah. I don't think they get much distro. They don't make enough, man.
Yeah.
6-barrel system's tiny. Like they're doing the damn thing.
Do you know what I would love to do is – we could make this an annual thing. We'll do this, but I like that we talk about this stuff during an episode. Like we'll do it.
Yeah.
I would love to, let's say January, we go back and we find sort of breweries that we didn't know before or are on a smaller scale that we really enjoyed because they're probably local-ish. And mm-hmm. you and I take a road trip over a weekend and we get beers from all those places. That'd and we fun. Bring them back to people who have never and may never get the chance to try them.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
I think that would be a great use of the company dollar.
Absolutely. Plus, if you're driving, I could drink at all those places.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
we can trade days. I'll do Friday, you do Saturday.
Deal.
We either both or neither do Sunday and hope we get home.
Yeah.
Great. Anything else in this beer?
I dig it. I think it's a really nice balance, super approachable, and it has that big hop punch that I like in a double IPA. Super clean, easy drinking. I dig it.
All right. If you got feedback, you, on anything we've discussed today, be it beer, be it film, be it you're on Patreon and it is the last Blockbuster in Bend, Oregon, where we drank a bonus beer, you can text us. You can call us 530-433-0839. Again, 530-433-0839. That's our number. Or send us a good old-fashioned email, fhccast@gmail.com. And in the meantime, we will be right back with Hot and Bothered, so don't go anywhere. Hot and Bothered. Hey, welcome to Hot and Bothered. Here we are. We're talking about stuff that doesn't always pertain to beer and movies. Sometimes it does. We got a little bit of everything this week. Johnny, we've both seen movies that probably don't deserve episodes of their own. I'm not sure how you feel about yours, but either way, we don't have time for a full episode. So,
and we also don't have time to watch every movie. There's a lot of stuff coming out right now.
Yes.
So like Flick Picks, that's why it's there, man.
Yeah, so I guess we're in a subset of Hot and Bothered, which is Flick Picks. Mm-hmm. What have you seen recently?
So just today, before we recorded.
Give me the name of the movie.
I took a half day off work because I've been working too much, and I was like, I have time to watch a movie. I have been wanting to watch Love Lies Bleeding for a while. It's been on my radar. So I finally got around to it, sat down this afternoon.
Director?
So it was directed by Rose Glass, who the only thing you might have seen her work so far, she directed St. Maud.
I certainly have.
Which I need to watch.
Is this a scary movie?
No.
Okay. Either way, brace yourselves. Here comes a trailer.
You talked to your dad recently?
Why?
Give us a call.
Where did you appear from?
Oklahoma.
Yeah, I've never been anywhere but here.
What were you doing with that big girl?
Get a lot of crazy ass foreigners mostly. How's it going, guys?
This here's Jackie.
Hi.
She needs a job. Says she'll do anything.
Yeah, you like guns?
Not really.
What the fuck you doing here, then? I'm a bit more powerful than a punch, huh?
Fuck yeah.
Call me when it's done.
What is this place? Huh?
You don't understand. Get back in the car.
They found a body.
Looks like you've got your hands full.
You'll regret this.
We'll just need to fight back. I'm gonna tell them everything you ever did.
FBI, open up.
Are you threatening me?
Yep.
Well, that was really stupid, honey.
I'll never fall in love, okay?
Okay, that was a trailer. Johnny, give me your thoughts. Anyone? Nope. Love Lies Bleeding, please. Give me your thoughts on that movie.
Okay, so it's billed as a romantic revenge thriller. This movie is fast-paced, and it has the same kind of energy, but not to the same degree as a
promising young woman. Get out.
No, Good Boy.
Get Him to the Greek.
With Robert Pattinson.
A24. Good time.
Close, but not to that level of intensity. Stressful. It wasn't stressful. It was dialed back from that, but it had that same vibe. This movie never slowed down. It was an unrelenting force. The relationship between Lou and Jackie was wild.
Who's in this?
So the cast is actually pretty stacked, believe it or not. So the main character, Lou, is played by Kristen Stewart. Jackie is played by Katie M. O'Brien. And then you've got Ed Harris popping up as Kristen Stewart's dad, and Dave Franco as kind of a, I won't spoil it, he's in this movie type.
It feels like you've spoiled it a little bit. Like, I know to watch out for Dave Franco now.
Well, no, like, because he's not necessarily a good guy, but he's not necessarily a bad guy. He's not the big bad guy, but he's not a good guy.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. But he's also not like the main character. He plays a supporting role in this really well. It was just this sweaty, steroid-fueled horny, crime, violent trip of a movie.
I have a question about the poster.
Yeah.
Which for people watching
it's a
on
great
YouTube,
poster.
Well, it looks like this. You have to do this. Here, you can use your hands and you can show it to the camera. But it looks like, I mean, is it like an 80s? Like, it feels like at least the poster is very much paying homage to.
No, it's set in the 80s.
Okay.
So it's like 80s gym culture.
It's a great poster design then.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's so great.
the letterbox one-liner is revenge gets ripped, which I think is fantastic.
Dude, for that and those type of one-liners to be used for A24 movies is hilarious. Like, I'd love to see the one-liner for Men. You know what I mean? Like,
oh, I almost think I know it.
Right?
Like, it's like everyone is, I'll find it.
Yeah. It's just absurd. Cause I don't know. This movie was multi-layered and had so much going on with all of the people in it. And it's a small cast. There's maybe five main players in this movie. You know, we have the two main characters and then several tertiary elements, but those two are the driving force. And Katie M. O'Brien, she got jacked. I don't know if she's jacked already, but she was looking super duper muscly for this movie, and it was a thing to behold. She's a specimen.
She's sort of coming onto the scene. So she was in Ant-Man Quantumania.
Okay.
Which I think neither of us still have seen.
Nope.
I have no interest. But she's going to be in the new Mission Impossible, or I think that's right. And she's also in the upcoming Twisters film.
Dude, I'm in for that, by the way.
I am too, and I'll tie it into my Hot and Bothered in a minute. But yeah, keep going.
Also, I would love for you to look up how tall Katie M. O'Brien is, because in this movie, with her physique and the cinematography they use, you feel like she, well, if you've seen the movie, the third act that's a little bit extrapolated, you'll know when you watch it. But just in the day-to-day, like some of the scenes in this movie, it feels like she's like 6'4".
Okay.
Like they make her look like this just badass, imposing, super muscular, but still feminine. Like it's this wild thing that she is. And it was so rad. Like she was so beefy and awesome.
All right, here's the IMDb page for her, which is, and it starts off by saying,
oh, I want to need her like wiki. I want to know how tall she is.
I can't find it. No, I can't. I found it. It's on her IMDb. Okay. But I will say her mini bio starts with Katie O'Brien is an actress and martial artist.
Sick.
From Indiana. There's also some fun trivia about her, which says Katie continues to teach and train martial arts and loves to incorporate that passion into her acting. She's 5'7".
Wow, she's so my gives height. Off, she's my height.
You don't necessarily all the time give off tall martial art feminine energy.
No, as much but as I would love
but
to.
It's possible. You should know that now it's possible.
Thank God.
If you train right, you can become that.
I just need a good cinematographer and some anabolic steroids injected directly into my butt.
Yeah. She used to be a competitive bodybuilder.
It shows, dude. Yeah. Like, yeah, she nailed it. She was the perfect casting choice for this.
This is trivia. I'm sorry. This is about this movie. She used to be a competitive bodybuilder. When a fan on social media tagged her under a post that had a casting call for a queer bodybuilder, she responded to it and was very eager getting an audition for it. It earned her a leading role in the film Love Lies Bleeding.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Oh, she's a bodybuilder in this movie.
Yeah.
That's like her job.
Yeah, she's the – let me read the overview just from Google, because you probably got the idea from the
I want to hit you with the letterbox one too.
Cool.
But go ahead.
Lou is a reclusive gym manager who falls hard for Jackie, an ambitious bodybuilder who's headed to Las Vegas to pursue her dream. Their love soon leads to violence as they get pulled deep into the web of Lou's criminal family.
It's exactly the same as Letterboxd. Also, to close the loop, the one-liner from Men is, what haunts you will find you.
See, that's appropriate.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah.
But like to have a cheesy one-liner like the one for this, revenge gets ripped. And it's like this.
It's a good line.
It's this like artsy, queer love story about a bodybuilder. Like it's so much more than that. Like that feels reductive. It's so silly. I really enjoyed this movie. I was super engaged the whole time. Ed Harris coming out of nowhere and looking absolutely like a cave troll.
What do you mean?
Something to see.
Like look, just
no, pull up a picture of him in this, bro. He's got the same haircut.
I'm sort of juggling lots of thoughts at the moment. I'm having a hard time. I'm trying to remember what I was going to tie in at the moment. Do you remember
Twisters?
Thank you.
Okay. So he had the same haircut as the tow truck driver from Harold and Kumar go to White Castle.
What a deep cut. I can't even picture that guy.
With the boils on his face. So basically, Ed Harris has got male pattern baldness, and he's grown it out super long. So long, stringy, like skullet.
Okay. I can sort of picture it. Yeah, it's gross.
I started this movie, didn't know Ed Harris was in it. He shows up on camera.
That's the move.
With that haircut. Fucking hate, bud.
Yeah.
But it was a thrill ride, man. It kept me engaged. I love the twists and turns it take. It got real trippy and kind of abstract towards the end, which was fantastic.
Sure.
100% worth a watch. I think you should watch it in particular. It's one of those A24 movies that falls in the Venn diagram of your and my interests and probably what we'd watch for entertainment.
Great.
So check it out.
Terrific. Okay. I am going to tie together what you've said.
Can I rate it real quick?
Oh, I would love if you would.
We rate flick picks, right?
Yeah, absolutely we do. Yeah, please.
It's a 9.2.
Whoa, dude, it's a 9.2? You need to write that down. You need to write that down in our notes.
All right.
Because that is a crazy good score.
It's 100% in the conversation so far as being one of my favorite movies of the year.
I guess I got to watch it. I mean, yeah. And you think I'd really enjoy it?
Yeah.
Then I'll watch it. That sounds awesome. I can't wait. Fantastic. Great. I will. I'll watch it. I'll watch it this week.
Cool.
I think I have time. Now I will tie in.
Twisters.
Yeah. With what you said.
Okay.
By saying, here comes a trailer for a film that came out in December of last year called Anyone But You. Don't go over.
Hey. Head of the wedding?
Of my sister? Yes, I am.
So where's your fiance? Wait, is this him? Hey, I'm Ben. I was her hall pass on your break.
Wow, you are a child.
It's a pretty long flight. Do you want anything from the front of the boat?
I'm all good on creatine and small dick insecurity.
Nothing small about me.
What the?
That's the jerk Poopy got with when she was on her break from Jonathan.
I could never be with someone like him.
This girl's a disaster.
They're gonna ruin our wedding.
Sorry.
How's it going, stranger?
What's going on over there?
They dated. She crushed his heart.
That man does not have a heart. No way.
Honey, look who's here.
Who is it?
My ex, Jonathan. My parents have been trying to get us back together.
He's like a son to us.
Maybe we should just tell everyone we're together.
What?
It would solve that problem for me, and you clearly want Margaret. She sees you with me. She wants what she can't have.
There's no way we can convince anyone we actually like each other.
You know, I still think about that night we spent together.
Shut up.
No, I'm serious. No matter how it ended, you're still pretty amazing. Convincing enough?
Let's do it.
Honey, here he is.
Oh, no, I'm with Ben.
So is it like we just got together or we've been sneaking around?
Let's just be affectionate. Showtime.
Permission to put my left hand on your right buttock.
Granted. Not a magic lamp.
Hey, little guy.
God damn it.
See you tonight.
We have to kick it up a notch.
Nice touch.
Nice finish. Oh, no, it's gonna be hard. When are you ever gonna learn?
Fuck it, it's fine.
Titanic me.
Are they watching?
Are they doing Titanic?
They're gone. Show's over.
Oh, my God.
Do you have a mole or something on your butt?
No.
One might be in you.
I'm good.
It's probably a better way to check than what I did.
It's a bad idea, right?
What did we miss?
What did we miss?
Fuck it, it's fine.
Okay, so again, that was a trailer for Anyone But You. And this is kind of a double tie-in because I do want to get your thoughts on Twisters.
Okay.
Which is a film that has Glenn Powell in it.
Okay.
Who is in Anyone But You.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the second person you've mentioned that was in Top Gun. We talked about Ed Harris, who had that awesome scene in Top Gun, and Glenn Powell. And I couldn't help but talk about Twisters because I saw the trailer as well. So into it.
Yeah.
A worthy remake.
Is it a remake or it's a sequel? Because it's set modern day. So
yeah. It's a resuscitation of what's going to be now a franchise, probably.
Yeah.
In the trailer, they say, we got twins. And I think it's a missed opportunity because they could have called the movie Twinsters, but they just went with Twisters, which I think is not correct.
Right.
Okay.
That's summertime. That is months from now. What I did see, yeah, Anyone But You, it's a rom-com in very much the traditional sort of 90s rom-com formulaic kind of guy meets girl.
Was there a meet cute?
Total meet cute.
Okay.
Sydney Sweeney is in, she's getting off a flight, I think, and she has to use the bathroom. Or maybe she's not even off a flight. I don't remember. She has to go to the bathroom. And she's in like a bagel shop or a cafe, and they have a customers only policy, ma'am. And she's like happy to buy something. But the gal's like, what's, you gotta go to the back of the line, long line. And she's like, really? I'm gonna pee my pants. And then Glenn Powell goes, hey, honey, do you still want your whatever, decaf mocha? Great. Can we get the key? Whatever. They hit it off. They have a date. She sneaks out the next morning because she's afraid of their chemistry. He's upset that she sneaks away. She comes back because she realizes she's made a mistake. Here's him talking shit about her to his friend because he's trying to be like a strong guy. Uh-oh. They go their separate ways, but then they end up at a wedding together. Shenanigans ensue. It's like funny in a way that isn't actually funny.
Okay.
Like in if you hold it up to any other movie, like it's not good, but it's funny in like a 90s rom-com way. So if you like that kind of thing, it's good. They're two hot people like flirting with each other for 90 minutes.
Okay.
It's good. Like it's in a beautiful location. You have poorly written side characters that are there just to get the occasional laugh if they can possibly make it. They're hoping to be A-list actors one day and they're never going to be. It's all right. It's a fun watch.
Okay.
Anyone But You, I think it's directed by Will Gluck. You know Will Gluck?
No.
Yeah.
Not a big Glucker.
He did Easy A, actually, which is
that was a good movie.
He also did Friends with Benefits with Timberlake and Mila Kunis.
Yep.
He's got sort of surface level kind of movie most of the time.
Yeah.
Did Peter Rabbit with Domhnall Gleeson.
All right.
No, no. I don't know.
I am stoked for Twisters. I will not be watching Anyone But You.
I don't think you should. But it was streaming, I think, on Netflix. Yeah. It's good. Like, it's fine. Sydney Sweeney does okay.
Okay. I'm skeptical of her acting ability, so.
And that's because of Euphoria.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
I think in Euphoria, she's playing a character and playing it really well.
Yeah, and also, like, the trailers of Madame Web.
Madame Web is a cinematic catastrophe that we have never before seen in the modern era of filmmaking. It was on every front bombed.
Yeah. It's great hearing the other actresses in that movie talk about the script they signed on for in the movie that was released.
Why do I feel like that was Sam Raimi?
It wasn't,
right? No. Okay. Dakota Johnson is a fantastic public figure. Like, mm-hmm. I love what she's – I think she's in character all the time. Hmm. I just think that's what she does.
Oh, she's come out pretty vocally
and
been like, yeah, that sucked.
She's, like, so sarcastic and dry, too, all the time. Like, it's a really refreshing sort of take on the Hollywood persona versus, like, I'm promoting my new movie. Like, she's like, I don't like it. It's not good.
Yeah.
It's great. Anyways, that's Anyone But You. See it if you want. I think check it out.
I mean, if you're into that.
Yeah,
if you're into that, check it out. A lot of people like stuff like that.
What else you got, dude?
So other than that, I finished the new series, the Fallout series, on Amazon Prime.
Mm-hmm.
Loved it. Absolutely loved it.
Loved it?
Loved it.
How many episodes?
8.
All right.
It was so fun.
Why?
Just the writing and the world building. I am not familiar at all with the Fallout games. So, like I mentioned this when I said that I was starting it. So there's no preconceived notions of what it should be. There's no room really for disappointment on an IP level. It's more of, if you just make a bad show, I'm going to not like it.
Sure.
So I went in fairly blank slate. Just be a good show.
Okay.
You know, you didn't have to live up to the video games. So they had carte blanche to do its own thing, and I wouldn't judge it. I really liked this post-apocalyptic world that they've built with these vaults and the people in the vaults and the people above the vaults and the whole scenario around the world existing and all the issues that we have. Some great characters in it. I mean, obviously, Walton Goggins as the ghoul. Is
the ghoul?
The ghoul.
All right.
He plays the ghoul.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. Cooper Howard is his actual name, but he's the Ghoul.
Got it.
Yeah, and mostly fairly unknown actors. Ella Purnell plays our main character, Lucy, and Aaron Clifton Moten plays Maximus. But yeah, really not a ton of recognizable actors or actresses, which kind of is nice because it takes away from the focus being maybe on them and enjoying or critiquing their performance. Mm-hmm. It lets you kind of absorb something as a whole, kind of having a blank slate on most of the people in it, which is kind of refreshing. Like, I don't have any preconceived notions about your acting ability. Impress me.
I love all that. I also take issue with you saying Ella Purnell is an unknown actress.
What has she been in?
You don't remember. She was in Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children, which we covered on the show in 2016. How could you forget?
I've completely forgotten that movie.
What? No, we covered Modern Times beer on that episode. It was like episode 3 of the show.
Oh, she was like the main character.
It was her and Asa Butterfield.
Huh.
Yeah, which still gets like one of the worst names in Hollywood ever.
Yeah.
What a terrible name.
Yeah. I don't remember that movie at all.
I do. It was kids with like superpowers, maybe?
Sure, they're peculiar.
That must be it, right?
It's not a big leap.
But we did, I swear we did like a Modern Times beer. It was like Monsters Park and like something else.
I could see it.
Okay. Well, great. I will maybe check it out, possibly.
Well worth a watch. It also motivated me to start playing Fallout 4, which is the most popular of the franchise, and I had it for free in my PlayStation Plus library. So they just released a PS5 patch to update the graphics and all that, so I can play like the PS5 version of Fallout 4, and it's currently downloading right now.
Well, that's an easy enough segue. Before I take that segue, the one-liner from Letterboxd is "Stay peculiar." A teenager finds himself transported to an island where he must help protect a group of orphans with special powers from creatures intent on destroying them. I don't remember this movie either.
Okay.
To be honest, I gave it a 5 out of 10.
Yeah.
So that makes sense.
Yeah.
Speaking of video games, I downloaded and have started playing Far Cry 6, which came out in 2021, which for me is a new game. It's the sixth and so far most recent edition of, or installment of the Far Cry series, which you usually play as a first person shooter, and you're in a larger than one person struggle to overcome some obstacle. Currently this game stars real life actor, Giancarlo Esposito as a bad guy who is a tyrannical figure in what feels to be a South American country, and we are trying to overthrow him and his regime.
He's such a great actor.
Pretty good game, too.
Yeah.
It's a huge world, almost too big. The gameplay's a little bit different. Far Cry 5 is incredible. I don't know that it's going to beat that, but I've enjoyed it. So nice. I couldn't help but take a piggyback off of you when you started talking video games.
Well,
so,
the Far Cry games are also fun.
Pretty great. I think that's all I got, dude. You got anything else you want to talk about this week?
I think I'm there, man.
Okay. Get in touch with us if you'd like. We would love to hear from you. Our phone number has been said throughout the episode. You can find us on social media if you want. And in the meantime, this episode wouldn't be what it is without the support of Bailey Minardi. Everybody on Patreon, check out the handlebar for a sweet happy hour. My name is Max Minardi.
My name's Johnny Summers. Drink some tasty beers, watch some films or TV shows, or
play some tennis.
Infomercials. Don't play tennis.
Play tennis.
Have some selfers.
Sure.
Anyways, be happy. Be nice to each other. We'll see you next week.
Report to set. Everyone's ready. We hope you enjoy.
Little bit of wood down.
This is Fresh Hop Cinema.